Okay, well, welcome everybody. Welcome to the May call. If you're new to the call, my name is Mark Reynolds. I'll be hosting the call today. And the format of this call is in a few minutes, I'll be introducing our guest speaker who we're so excited to have, Julia Robertson from Ocean Conservancy. After her comments, and hopefully there'll be time for some Q&A, we'll go over some of the things that happened since last month's call. You were pretty busy in April. And then we'll go over the things that we're asking people to do in the US and Canada. And then I want to finish up the call by telling you some highlights for the conference, because there's some really exciting things happening in June. And I'm hoping everybody has the experience of participating in the call, whether you're coming to DC or not. As of Friday, there were 1,251 people registered. So there'll be more people at the conference this year, even surpassing the 1,300 from last year. Which means most of you can't come. But we want you to have the experience of participating in the conference, so we'll share some things and then tell you some of the things you can do to help us get ready for the conference. So our guest, Julia Robertson, is the Vice President of Communications for Ocean Conservancy. Her passion is communicating about people and stories behind big environmental issues in a way that leads to action, something that's important for us. She is a skilled writer, and media relations professional, deeply committed to ocean issues and to finding intersections between serving nature and people's needs in our rapidly growing world. Julia, one of the things I like to do is just tell our guest speaker a little bit about the people that you're going to be talking to today. Sure. When Marshall Saunders founded our organization early on, he used to say to me all the time, and he'd say to the volunteers on our weekly calls with the group leaders, be outrageous, it's the only place that isn't crowded. And these people are week in and week out outrageous in such delightful ways. So I want to just share a couple of things with you real quickly. One is about Kathy Orlando, who starts our international chapters. And we've had a lot of demand in Africa recently. And it's challenging to start Africa chapters because getting there is impossible. You know, our Africa national coordinator is in Nigeria. Even it's really hard for him to get in and out of Nigeria. So when we started Cameroon, we had one member in the Cameroon group who we could get enough of a Zoom connection sporadically to do the group start in fits and starts, but eventually able to get through the whole thing. Wow. When we got to Zimbabwe, we couldn't even get a Zoom connection. So we actually started our first chapter by text. So this 3-hour live training was conducted by text. And then I want to just show you one thing from our Woodlands, Texas chapter. So we have multiple chapters in Texas, and the Woodlands chapter, this isn't surprising because of the way this chapter functions, they found out that ExxonMobil actually has an Earth Day. So, okay, wow, I didn't know ExxonMobil had an Earth Day. So they figured out how to table at the ExxonMobil Earth Day. And they signed up 52 people for their chapter at the ExxonMobil Earth Day. So I thought that was pretty remarkable. Okay, so one of the things that we like to do occasionally is have some of our friends who are taking other big pieces of the puzzle on in the world. So, you know, our part is putting a fair, transparent, effective price on carbon emissions. But we need our friends to succeed also. So we need people like the Ocean Conservancy and the really important stuff that they're doing to also succeed if we're going to hand over a planet to our kids and grandkids that we're committed to. So we're really happy that Julia Robertson could be on today and talk about some of the really important work they're doing and to just give you an update on her and the organization's really important work. So Julia, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. Wow, what a wonderful introduction. And I am just going to share my screen so I don't see my giant face. All right, is that working?
Yep,
I'm seeing a nod, so I will go ahead and get started. So hello everyone. Thank you so much for having Ocean Conservancy and me here with you all today on this Saturday. Just a quick little snapshot of something that Ocean Conservancy, who we are and what we're doing. We're 47 years young. We're a national nonprofit advocacy organization, and we're working with you and so many of our members and people who care and depend on the ocean to protect the ocean from today's greatest global challenges. And I'm just going to make sure that we can move. Excellent. Okay, so hello, Citizens Climate Lobby. I am Julia. Just wanted to put a picture up there in case there was anything going on with the video. Thank you so much for having me today. Thank you for the amazing work that you all are doing. I had the pleasure of moderating a panel at your November conference last November, I believe. And it was incredible to hear the conversations that were happening in the hallways, to hear the really smart questions that were being asked about climate change and coral. I swear you knew more than the moderators and the panelists, those people that were in the audience. And so it is just a real honor to spend part of my weekend with you all, because I think you are just doing incredible work and we need each and every one of you. So if you remember nothing else from our conversation today, I just wanted to put these three things out there, and we'll get to them in more detail as we come along. But signuptocleanup.org. This is a very important website for Ocean Conservancy, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Like us on Facebook if you're concerned about the ocean, if you're passionate about the ocean, if you want to read about cool ocean stories. We do a lot of sharing. And then download our app called CleanSwell, and I will tell you more about that once we get to it. But it's a really easy way for you to start picking up trash and recording it and helping inform some of the solutions to one of the biggest problems facing the ocean, which is trash and plastic. So, quick background on Ocean Conservancy. I'm sure some of you recognize the gentleman in this photo. Our founder, Bill Kardash, was attending an International Whaling Commission meeting in Washington, D.C. back in 1972, I believe. This was well before Ocean Conservancy existed. And he started chatting in the hallway to a guy strumming a guitar. That person ended up being John Denver, who said, "Bill, you know, what are you going to do about these issues, you know, facing the whales and facing the ocean?" And so with that conversation in his back pocket with John Denver, Bill Kardash started the Delta Corporation, which eventually became Ocean Conservancy. And one of our first acts was delivering a number of signatures to the International Whaling Commission, encouraging more protections for endangered whales. So that is us. So who is Ocean Conservancy? So we work around the world. We have our headquarters in Washington, D.C., where I am right now. We also work along the West Coast. We have offices in Alaska and in the Gulf of Mexico. And so, you know, as I mentioned, we work on some of the biggest issues facing the ocean, which is 70% of our planet. So demands and needs our attention. We have a program focused in the Arctic. We work with local communities in the Arctic and are doing a lot right now on oil and gas. We have a Gulf of Mexico program that's focused on restoration after the BP Deepwater Horizon disaster, which was the largest, you know, environmental disaster in U.S. history. We're still tracking and measuring the impacts of that spill in the Gulf of Mexico and trying to make sure that the dollars coming from the settlement are going to restore the ecosystem and the waters in that region. We have a really large fisheries program. America has some of the most, you know, some of the best and healthiest fisheries in the world, and that is large part due to our strong laws on the books. And so we do a lot of work focused on fisheries legislation. I worked for many years on our ocean acidification program, which is directly related to what you all are working on every day with climate change, where carbon, you know, emissions is turning the ocean more acidic. And then today we're going to talk a little bit about our Trash Free Seas program. But first, I just wanted to put up a picture of our CEO, Janice Searles-Jones. I hope that Mark and others get the chance to meet her at some point, because she is phenomenal. She is leading us into our fourth decade. We're exploring what else we can do on climate. She is a lawyer. She's based in Portland. I have never met someone who is more passionate about the ocean and the communities that depend on it. So with that, we will move into Trash Free Seas. So our trash program is our largest program. And it is one of the biggest problems facing our ocean. It's one of the most visible problems facing our ocean. It is one of the most tangible problems facing our ocean. In many cases, you know, if you look at this picture, every single piece of trash, it's, you know, not a stretch to say that that was probably in someone's hands at some point. So there is something that there that we can all do about this problem. And I find that really empowering as a communicator, because so many of the issues that we often have to talk about are kind of big and amorphous, and it's hard to bring it back to personal responsibility. And trash is one of those issues that that we feel can really bring people into the culture of ocean conservation, as well as, you know, the stewardship of our planet more broadly. So like I said, it is one of the biggest problems facing our ocean. You know, Ocean Conservancy has had a trash program for more than 30 years now. We empower citizen science. I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. We catalyze and drive new science. We work at the international policy level, and we're encouraging industry commitments and improvements to stop the flow of trash into our ocean. And so this is just a graphic, and I'm not going to go through it in all detail, but, you know, what I wanted to really focus in on here is that one of the biggest challenges that we face when it comes to trash in our ocean, certainly internationally, is a lack of proper waste management and collection. And I'm sure a lot of you have seen some of the coverage around this issue in recent months, because it does seem to be just exploding in the public consciousness, in part thanks to those heartbreaking videos of a plastic straw being removed from a turtle's nostril, or, you know, the seahorse that had its little, you know, tail wrapped around, you know, a plastic cotton bud or Q-tip. And so, you know, trash is everywhere in our ocean, and plastic in particular is a scourge. And, you know, one of the things that we like to talk about is that the ocean gyres, you know, the big Pacific garbage patch that a lot of people think of when they think of ocean trash, you know, that represents something like less than 3% of the amount of trash that is in our ocean. And so one of the most effective things that we can do is to improve waste management and collection in some of these countries where, you know, development is just exploding. And so one of the, you know, in addition to working at the international level, in addition to catalyzing new science, one of the things that I'm most proud of that really grounds Ocean Conservancy in this issue is the International Coastal Cleanup. This is the world's largest single day volunteer effort on behalf of the ocean. And it is something that started over 30 years ago, as I mentioned, on a beach in Texas, and it happens every third Saturday in September. You definitely don't have to be by a beach to participate. As I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of trash and plastic flowing into the ocean. A lot of that is coming from rivers. And so in the, that would be the top right corner. This is an island that I can actually see out my window here in Washington, DC. It's called Kingman Island. And we had our International Coastal Cleanup event held here last September. It's in the Anacostia, and so we were able to collect a lot of trash that otherwise could have ended up in the ocean and is, you know, polluting the Anacostia. In 2017, over 20 million pounds of trash were picked up off our coastlines and out of our waterways in over 112 countries. And we covered enough coastline from all of our volunteers to walk around the moon twice, which is just kind of mind-boggling to me. And what Ocean Conservancy has found, you know, over the course of our time doing these cleanups and organizing these cleanups, we work with local partners on the ground, especially internationally. There's a number of local groups. I'm sure some of you on the phone have participated in these types of cleanups. There's a real appetite to get out and do something that helps the community, helps, you know, makes a difference to a global problem that we are seeing more and more of, and that it's something that we can actually solve. And the other thing that we have tried to do at Ocean Conservancy on the issue of trash is to bring people in. We call it the gateway issue. You know, it's tangible. Everyone produces trash. It's not, you know, a really hard concept to wrap your brain around. And we've been able to bring our volunteers, bring our coordinators into a culture of conservation and stewardship by walking them through the door of the International Coastal Cleanup. And so, you know, like I mentioned, we've been going for more than 30 years. We've had over 12 million volunteers participate, 228 million pounds of trash kept out of our ocean in over 153 countries, and over 244 million items collected. And so that is absolutely wonderful. And we love having people out on the beaches, like I mentioned. But the big thing that sets us apart from, you know, other cleanups, which we absolutely love and encourage, is data collection. So for pretty much the length of the International Coastal Cleanup, we have been collecting data from volunteers on what they are finding on the beaches. And that has really informed the marine science community when it comes to you know, looking at papers, looking at, you know, how trash impacts different types of marine animals, and figuring out what sort of local solutions can make a difference to some of these communities. So you can see in the top left of the screen, for many years and in many places, this is still the number one form of data collection, is our data watch, our data cards. And so we, you know, these are paper, and volunteers throughout the year, but on our, you know, third Saturday in September, which is our main cleanup day, they record all the trash that is collected. We make sure that it is, you know, properly put away and removed. And then those data cards are collected and sent into Ocean Conservancy, where we log them. And that is pretty cumbersome, as you can imagine, and it takes quite some time to get all of those data cards collected. And so a few years ago, we launched our CleanSwell app, which you can see just here in the bottom left. And so I'll walk you through the CleanSwell app. It's available right now. You can download it in the Apple Store or an Android. You create, you download the app, you create an account at a cleanup or at any point, you know, during your work week or on the weekend. You can collect trash, dispose of it, and record it in the app. If you've got a group, you can create a group name for identification purposes, and then, you know, you can submit the data via the app, and then it is entered onto our TIDES database, which we're in the process of relaunching. That'll be updated in July. But it is something that has really changed the game for us, because it's more immediate in terms of data collection. You know, it's easy to use. You know, everyone can use it. And we're playing around, you know, with the accuracy to make sure that that we're getting, you know, all of the right information. And so, like I've mentioned, you know, our cleanups happen the third Saturday in September. We would love to see you all join one. We know that you are incredibly busy. You're volunteering your time with Citizens Climate Lobby. You do many other things in your community. And if there's a local cleanup happening near you, we would love to see you. So sign up to cleanup.org. It's September 15th. This year, we have a map of the cleanups coming in July, like I mentioned, and you know, we're really excited about the event this year in particular, because there has been so much attention and focus on this issue. And with that, I will turn it back over to Mark to say, you know, thank you. We are so appreciative to be here, and we're really excited, because we think that that each of you has a role to play in our goal of trash-free seas. So thank you. And we hope to see you out on a beach or by a river or a waterway one of these days, probably in September.
Okay, good. Well, we have a few minutes to be able to take a couple of questions in the chat, Julia. So Ricky's monitoring the chat for us and can see what kinds of things people want to ask. So Can you hang on for a couple of questions?
Of course. Yeah. Should I open up the chat box and should I stop sharing my computer or my screen, or do you want me to hold on to it?
You can keep sharing your screen, but you can go ahead and go in the chat box. It looks like Salt Lake City has their hand up. So does that mean you're going to put something in the chat, or are you going to unmute your line and ask the question, Salt Lake City?
Hey, Mark, this is Ricky. Let me try to.
Ricky, I think it'll
unmute
be best
their
if
line
you
here. I'm gonna unmute their line real quick.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening in the chat.
Oh, good.
Okay, well, Julie, let me just say one of the things I saw in the chat, which is somebody asked where does the majority of the trash come from? Was one of the first questions that came in the chat.
Sure. So there was a paper released, I think it was in February of 2015, by a scientist called Jenna Jambeck, who is amazing, that we work with very closely. She met her husband at a waste dump, which she always talks about. She's an incredibly unique individual. She worked with a number of other scientists to identify where that trash was coming from and where the plastic flows into the ocean are the greatest. And it's coming from, you know, five countries in Southeast Asia. And so that is China, that is Indonesia, that's Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand. And so those are the main places where the flow of trash into the ocean is the greatest. And it corresponds with, you know, a lot of the rivers and the coastal development in those countries. And so the U.S. is not in the top five because, you know, we do, broadly speaking, have you know, really good waste management and collection. But we're in the top 20, so we can do better. And, you know, the International Coastal Cleanup is a part of that, in addition to reducing single-use plastic, skipping the straw, reusable water bottles, all the things that I know so many of your volunteers are already doing.
Great. Okay. Well, there's I've seen about 50 real quick questions. One of the most recent ones I just saw is, do you work with industry at all to try and get them to reformat plastics?
We do, actually. So that's a great question. We, about 8 years ago now, we formed something called the Trash Free Seas Alliance. And it is a group of businesses, industry, conservation groups like us, like WWF, like the Marine Mammal Center, and scientists. And so that group helped, you know, catalyze and drive the science, you know, that looked at where all this plastic was coming from. We've also looked at, you know, biodegradable plastic and improving recyclability rates. And one of the things that we're convening right now through the Trash Free Seas Alliance is with the Outdoor Retailer Association around microfibers, you know, around the synthetic fibers in our clothing, which is, you know, it's an emerging area of study for scientists, but it's one that's quite concerning.
Wow. Okay. Boy, they're coming fast and furious. So one of the ones that just popped on my screen is, can you address the connection between ocean health and climate change? It's a pretty big question.
Oh my gosh. It's a huge question. And yes, I would love for our chief scientist, George Leonard, to come back and speak to you all. Ocean health and ocean health is fundamental to our planet's health. And as I'm sure so many of your volunteers and members know, the ocean is a huge carbon sink. So as we release more emissions into the atmosphere, so like something like 30% is being absorbed by the ocean. It is causing the ocean to become more acidic. It is causing the ocean to warm. The Gulf of Maine, as I'm sure some of your Maine members know, is warming faster than almost anywhere else on the planet. That has huge implications for fisheries. Lobster, for example, along New England continues to move further and further north, in part because of these warming waters. There is you know, there's differences in fisheries behavior, in addition to, you know, the impact on coral reefs that warming, bleaching, and acidification has. And so, you know, I haven't even touched on the Arctic yet, but it is a huge challenge for the ocean. It is something that we are thinking about every day.
And there was a few questions came in about your ocean acidification program. Can you say a little bit about that?
Sure. Yes. I worked on our ocean acidification program for many years. And so it is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. We started this program, I want to say about 8 years ago, when ocean acidification research was really starting to explode. We were starting to see it mentioned, you know, a lot in the literature. The climate change debate was, you know, really fractious. And at the same time, people really didn't know or understand what ocean acidification was. And so what we did, and we did public opinion polling on ocean acidification. We worked with a number of growers, oyster growers, and scientists to learn more about what, you know, was happening to the ocean as a result of acidification. And there was a huge challenge, you know, I think it's probably safe to say a catastrophe that happened on the west coast of the United States in the Pacific Northwest, where ocean acidification was actually killing off, you know, for lack of a scientific term, the baby oysters that were, you know, that's a $272 million industry in Washington State. And so we've done a lot of work with the industry and with decision makers in different states, as well as in Congress, to make sure that ocean acidification research is funded, to make sure that businesses that are at risk from acidification have the resources that they need to respond to it, like the oyster growers in Washington State, like lobstermen in Maine, and to actually, you know, have the businesses and communities that are concerned about acidification to be more engaged in the fight and in the push to reduce carbon pollution.
Great. And then just so everybody knows, Ocean Conservancy is going to be a major part of our oceans panel at the June conference.
Yes.
So for those of you who are in June, we'll be able to get a lot more of this. We would love to have you back for just a straight Q&A at some time also, Julia, because there's so many questions. We have another platform called CCL Community that happens on Thursday evenings, and maybe we can get you on one of those because it looks like there's about 100 other questions that people would like to get to today.
Oh my gosh.
If you want to... if you want to stand for the next 10 minutes of the call, there's a few things we want to update people on, but thank you so much for your work. It's just, it gave me chills listening to every single minute of what you're saying. It's so important, and we're so, you know, thrilled that you're doing it and, you know, cheering you on. I'm sure a lot of our people will volunteer some of those cleanups, but, you know, we really want to make sure that you succeed.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you again. And I'm sorry we didn't get to all the questions, but my email address is jroberson, R-O-B-E-R-S-O-N, at oceanconservancy.org. So if anyone wants to email me, I would love to come back for one of your community meetings and perhaps bring one of our scientists who could address some of these questions as well. But thank you so much, everyone.
Okay.
I hope you have a good rest of your meeting.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. So I want to... Yeah, so great to have you. Thank you so much. So I want to go over some of the stuff that happened since last month's call. So between letters to the editor and op-eds, we had 301 pieces published. That means three of the first 4 months of this year, we've had over 300 pieces published. So for everybody who's submitting letters, op-eds, I hadn't submitted a letter for about a year, and I sent one this week, and I forgot just how delightful and fun that is just to send it in. Mine hasn't even been published yet, and I'm excited. We got 72 endorsements this month, or in the month of April, and seven of those were municipal. I also want to give a shout out to Eugene, the Eugene chapter, Milton, and everybody up there has been doing a lot of outreach to their city and great work on that. There were 74 meetings with Senate and House offices, and that follows up 74 in March. So that's a lot of making connections back home in district with offices and setting a stage for being there in DC with everybody in June. There were 482 outreach events. So that means a lot of tabling, a lot of public presentations, which in the last week, we tipped over 100,000 members in CCL. So your outreach events really paid off. And then one program I just want to emphasize, Bill Barron and his team had an editorial board meeting in Grand Junction, and their paper ran an endorsement of our policy within a couple of days. So I just want to again remind us all how important it is that when we reach out to the editorial boards, and it always pays off for us. Okay, which brings me to what we're doing in the US and Canada this month. So in Canada, we're focusing on two things. One is local actions that will build support for carbon pricing throughout Canada, and then also meeting editorial boards. So just as I was saying, we actually almost have a one-to-one ratio of editorial board meetings to the number of times where we get papers to make an editorial endorsement. In the US, we're going to be doing three things. One is planning our meetings for DC. And I particularly want to talk to those of you who won't be coming in DC, so you'll be participating in the conference locally. We want your input on those meetings with your member of the House and your two senators. So we want everybody to actively participate and feel like they had something to say, and there are very good planning tools in the action sheet for how to plan an effective meeting with a member of Congress. And then also, particularly for people who won't be in DC, set an ambitious goal for the June 6th Congressional call-in day. So it's a little bit earlier than we've done it in previous years, and we want to get as many calls in as possible. And then the third thing is, embedded in your action sheet is a study guide. Now, the people who put this together, Rick Knight, Brett Cease, Madeline Pera, the tool is, it was Grand Junction, Colorado, Rick Knight. The tool was designed to make sure that if you're going on the Hill and you say, what do I need to know to be ready to be on the Hill? Everything's in there. You know, in previous years, we said, we want you to do this number of laser talks, or these 10 are particularly important. But what we said is here's a specific package and you're ready. So it's very nice that it was designed for the Hill. But as you bring on new people to your chapter, you now have a study guide that says, if you want to talk about the things that are most essential to our success, here they are in one place as a study guide. So that was just a really nice piece of work, and that it's all in one spot where we have a way of making sure that we're prepared on things that are most essential for our success. So we're hoping that you all get a chance to kind of go through that and look at the items that you're, yeah, I know a lot about the REMI study, but I don't know so much about the household impact study, so maybe I'll spend a little bit more time on that. Okay, so let me just say a couple of things about the conference now. So first of all, as I said at the start of the call, as of Friday, there were 1,251 people registered for the conference. There are, right now, as of Friday, 204 meetings scheduled already, and we're a month out, and 47 of those are face-to-face with a member of the House and Senate. So 4 years ago was when we started first making a big push to try and add conservatives, because when Bob Inglis was doing the keynote and he said, okay, you know, you're bipartisan and you need to have Republicans in Republican meetings, and can all the conservatives here stand up? And four people did. It was one of those major cringe moments of all time of the conference. There's 123 conservatives registered for the conference, and that means 39 of 50 states. So the possible 50 states, 39 states have someone identifying themselves as conservative coming to the conference. For everybody who's been working on that in the conservative caucus, Jim Tolbert in particular, congratulations, that is just great work. Also, there's 116 students coming, and they're participating in plenary and breakout sessions, so we'll have a large presence of young people. Now, we've been working for this crazy, outrageous goal of trying to get one person from every congressional district. And 23 states already have all of their congressional districts covered, including places like Louisiana and Mississippi. Up to 2 years ago, we were reaching out to everybody and saying, do you know anybody in Louisiana or Mississippi so we can get people from those states? And those states are now full. And maybe the one that's craziest of all at this point is Texas has 36 congressional districts. A week ago, we were missing 10 districts, but a bunch of people, our regional coordinators, got together and said, you know what, let's go for Texas getting full coverage. So Sabrina Fu in Maryland made some calls, and Kathy Orlinsky in Los Angeles made some calls, and we're only missing 4 districts at this point. So we now have 32 of 36 congressional districts in Texas covered. And the two ones that we're really focused on at this point, if you know anybody in Texas 11 or Texas 15, Texas 11 is Midland, Odessa, that area. At Texas 15 is McAllen, Edinburgh. That's crazy. And how fun would it be if we had all 36 congressional districts in Texas covered? So next month from the call, I'll be calling in live from the conference. What happens is I have a board of directors meeting the day before the conference starts, but I always leave the board of directors meeting to do the call. For those of you who will be in DC, you'll be able to participate in the call there live. We'll have a room that will have a big screen. You'll be able to watch it. For the rest of you, you'll be participating remotely, and we appreciate your participation either way. All right, Ricky, do you want to unmute everybody? And if everybody could just give a go Texas.